Welcome to this tour of Pembroke College Chapel. Before we go into the chapel, we might just take a look at the cloister which forms the entranceway to the chapel and which has the war memorials to members of the college who died in the First and the Second World Wars. On your right, as you face the entrance to the chapel, you'll see the large white panels that record the names of those who died in the 1914-18 war. The dates beside the lists are the dates of matriculation of the young men who died. And you can see from 1909 through to 1916 that something like a third of the young men who matriculated were dead by 1919. I always think it's interesting to take a look at the names of the regiments. They're very evocative. The Duke of Wellington's West Riding Regiment, the Leicestershire Yeomanry, the Seaforth Highlanders, one kind of regiment, and then the London Rifle Brigade must have been a quite different kind of organisation. One of our graduate students did some research into one of the names, H.G. Fielding Johnson, which you'll find towards the bottom of the second column of the panel, just to the right of the main central panel. He was Royal Engineers Signals. We know a little bit about Fielding Johnson. He had been a member of the Territorials for the term that he was actually in Cambridge. And when the war broke out, he somehow managed to get himself attached to a regular regiment as a motorcycle messenger. He joined the regiment in Dublin, and the regimental records show them travelling across England and eventually coming into France, where they spent a couple of days organising themselves and getting ready to go out. The records tell of Fielding Johnson being sent out to organise communications between different parts of the regiment, and on the third time he was sent out, he disappeared. His body was never found. His military career lasted about 3 weeks. On the other side of the cloister, you'll find the bronze plaques that commemorate those who died during the Second World War. There are many fewer names, as many fewer people died during the Second World War from the United Kingdom. Notable is the number of young men who joined the RAF. This may partly have been because of the strong engineering tradition that Pembroke had even at that stage, but also it was the young men who had had access to motor cars and to motorcycles who were often capable of being trained for this role, and many of them died. We'll now make our way through the doors into the chapel, go through the antechapel and turn left up into the main chapel. The chapel, which was completed in 1665, was a replacement for the old chapel, now known as the Old Library. Pembroke had had a chapel since 1347, when it was founded, and was in fact the first first college in Cambridge to have its own chapel. Until that point, colleges had worshipped in a local parish church. This chapel was a donation to the college by Bishop Matthew Wren. Bishop Matthew Wren had been a close companion of Charles I, and when Charles I was executed at the conclusion of the Civil War, he was imprisoned in the Tower of London. Whilst in the Tower, he made a vow that if he were to come out with his life and his fortune, he would make a gift to his old college, and this chapel is his gift. It was built by Christopher Wren, then a very young professor of mathematics in Oxford, who happened to be Matthew Wren's nephew. Many of the details in this chapel were found repeated in much of Wren's later work. He went on, of course, to be the architect of St Paul's Cathedral in London and of very many of the churches that were burnt down in the fire of London in 1666. The chapel is laid out in collegiate style, that's with the benches facing one another. This is originally a monastic way of laying out a church, as indeed the colleges in Cambridge were originally semi-monastic in foundation, and is designed for the recitation of psalms. One side will say the odd-numbered verses, and the other side will respond with the even-numbered verses. And the recitation of psalms, either by singing or by speaking, is still central to the worship that is done in this chapel. The chapel has rich wooden details around the outside, and it's well worth looking at them to see what they have. The largest panels are called cartouches. Those are the ones with the central boss in the middle. At the top of some of the cartouches, you will see a rather attractive-looking cherub face with little wings underneath. And at the bottom, a foliot face or some kind of a green man shouting. Interestingly, if you look closely at the next one along, you will probably see at the bottom a grotesque face. And at the top, it's just possible to make out the nostrils of a dog poking its face through the foliage. I don't think it's possible to suggest any significant religious imagery to these. I think they're what caught the imagination of the contractor for this panelling, who was Edmund Pierce. Go up to the platform, up three steps, and turn and look back at the organ. The columns supporting the organ loft are Corinthian columns, and if you look at the chapel from the outside, from Pembroke Street, you will see that there are Corinthian columns there. And this kind of attention to classical detail is what marks out Pembroke College Chapel as the first classical chapel in Cambridge. Before Pembroke College Chapel, no classical chapels had been built, and after the chapel, nothing was built in any other style for about two centuries. Looking west at the chapel in this way, you can see it very much as Wren designed it and wished it to be. And it corresponds very closely to the detailed architect's model which would have been used by the builders and which is stored by the college in another room. You're standing where the altar would have been, and you can see that the interior is rich but essentially reformed. The most prominent feature is the lectern, and the worship is focused on the hearing of the word of God rather than on religious imagery. For much of the history of the chapel, prayers were compulsory for undergraduates morning and evening. And if you make your way down to the prayer benches just to your right, you can see that they were not always totally compelling for those who were forced to attend. There is some very high quality, very deeply cut graffiti in that bench. And if you squat down, you can see that it is just out of the line of vision of the master's stall to the left of the Corinthian columns. On the back row, we have the fellow's stalls. And if you move some papers, you can take a look at the cushions on which the papers rest. The picture there is the coat of arms of Bishop Matthew Wren, and these cushions are also contemporary with the chapel. They're done in what is known as Turkey work. It was an attempt to set up a local English industry to replace the expensive carpets imported from the Middle East. And Bishop Matthew Wren, as a particularly wealthy bishop, was a patron of this movement to try and establish a local industry. The east end of the chapel is dominated by a very fine Baroque organ, which supports a magnificent musical tradition still very strong in Pembroke College. Now make your way back to the platform and turn east to look at the altar table and the stained glass windows. The very fine decorated arch that dominates this end of the chapel is not by Wren, it's by Gilbert Scott. Gilbert Scott was called in the 19th century to extend the chapel because the numbers in the college had grown and it wasn't possible to get everyone in for compulsory morning and evening prayer. The arch is Wren in inspiration. It's a quotation from a section of St. Paul's, but it's not originally Wren. And it gives the frame or the setting to a part of the chapel which has a much more much higher emotional temperature and a much more liturgical feel than the rest of the chapel. Look, for example, at the painting over the altar. This is a good copy of a painting by Barocci. It came from the collection of Sir Joshua Reynolds after his death, and it illustrates the deposition of Christ from the cross. The crucifixion has taken place and he is on his way to burial. It's a piece full of passion and clarity and movement. Just to the left of the altar table, there is Bishop Ridley's chair. Bishop Ridley, one of the prominent Protestant reformers, was master of this college, and that chair was made for him as master and came back to the college fairly recently from his family. Bishop Ridley was one of the Protestant martyrs who was burned in Broad Street in Oxford during the time of Queen Mary. The altar rails in front of the altar are very, very similar to some found in the Church of St. Stephen Walbrook, another Wren church, and illustrate the continued connection of Wren with this chapel for some decades after the original building. Pembroke College Chapel is still very much a working church. Evensong on Sunday in term time is well attended and beautifully sung with good preaching. There is daily prayer in term time, and the baptisms, weddings and funerals and other celebrations of the community find their way through the chapel. Although it was completed in 1665, it's a crucial part of the way the college continues its life. Now make your way back down through the chapel to the antechapel. The antechapel was originally lit by natural light, and if you look above the chandelier, you can see a large circle, which would originally have been what is known as an oculus, allowing the light from the big west window, which you can see from outside, to shine through into this room, and it must have been very lovely. During the Victorian period, the organ grew in size in order to cope with Victorian music. In fact, it grew so large that in the end we had to move it out because it was crushing the organ loft altogether. And the current organ is much lighter. You're standing immediately beneath it. The most interesting feature of the antechapel is the alabaster on the wall opposite the main entrance. It's an English 15th century depiction of St. Michael and the Virgin, and the imagery is very interesting. St. Michael is holding a balance in which he is weighing the good and the bad parts of the soul of the person who has died. On the left are the good parts, and on the right are the bad parts, depicted with horns. And a small devil is struggling desperately to pull that side of the balance down so that the soul will go to hell. The soul is being protected by Mary under her cloak, and she is resting the beads of her rosary on the balance so that the good side is found heavier, and Michael is showing some placid satisfaction in being able to give judgment for the soul so the soul can go to heaven. Very much hope that you've enjoyed your visit to Pembroke College Chapel. Before you leave, do feel free to sit quietly and think about some of these things and to remember God in this beautiful building. If you want to know anything more about the work of the chapel, do feel free to contact me, James Gardam. I'm the Dean, and you'll find my email address on the college website. If you'd like to buy a CD of the music, either of the choir or of the organ, they are available from the Porter's Lodge.